Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hey everybody, it's Michael Steele here. Now, I know you're waiting for the next big episode of the Michael Steele Podcast, but in the meantime, give a listen to this Michael Steele Podcast Quick Take.
This Michael Steele Podcast Quick Take with political analyst Rachel Bitticoffer was recorded earlier this month.
This situation with coronavirus is a new leveler. And as much as the GOP established order of things tried to rewrite history and normalize Trump, the way this is being handled and the impact that it is having on the country exposes that. And people are like, wait a minute, this guy is incompetent to manage this problem.
Yes.
WTF, you know, is that where this potentially could go? And then does that set up the thinking of voters as they go to the polls and assess, you know, who they want to actually not just, deal with the remnants of Corona and what will be probably by that point, you get into the third quarter of this year, a possible, if not full-blown recession, but who's going to take us into the future to manage that particular issue or problem?
Right. I mean, here's the nice thing. I mean, there's always a silver lining to every shit show, right?
Right.
Here's the nice thing about where we're at is, you know, number one, yes, it's pulled the curtain completely back and it has exposed the base problem of Donald Trump, which is the man is mentally incompetent of the job, right? And it is now it's going to do is it's going to allow us to see just how bad we are down this, you know, into my research land of where hyperpolarization, partisanship is all that matters, right? And I was just, like, literally could not have served this conversation up better than my last tweet, which was in relation to a column, I think, a quote about Doug Jones' race down
in Colorado. I saw that, yes.
and so, you know, I mean, if the old rules still apply at all, then Doug Jones now has a good chance of winning that seat back in Alabama where he had zero chance a month ago, right? And the reason is because, you know, Trump has now been exposed as a complete incompetent, and that price of incompetency isn't some trade tariffs and some farms failing. It's human life, right? It's the price of the entire American economy. And so, you know, what we would expect to see now is Doug Jones pulling ahead of Sessions, if that's the nominee or the South football guy, right? And I don't know that we're going to see that. So my answer to you is this. I will believe that Republicans will punish Donald Trump for this when I see it in the data.
Right.
And what we need to see, I think we're going to see a tick down, right? Because Trump has been ticking up, right, slightly in his approval ratings. That's only a product of there's this primary going on the other side, and voters are seeing that mess, and that always helps the incumbent party a little bit.
But
you know, now what we'd expect is a tick down, at least, at the very least, right? I mean, in the 80s, what we'd see is a collapse, okay? But now all we can hope for is at least a tick down, and if and in that data, when these data sets start coming out, the first thing I'm going to go look for is the partisan breakdown. And what I'll be looking for in the partisan breakdown is the party split for Republican approval, because it's been 90-10, 90-10, 90-10. And unless and until that 90-10 starts to move, Donald Trump is still in the same reelection landscape that he was when I released that model.
Yeah, so in other words, Republicans will still vote for a pedophile over the right, you know, voting for the right kind of candidate as opposed to one that's sort of right up in the Trump lane. There was a piece that was done on your work by Politico, and the headline, I think, kind of put in stark relief the essence of what you do and how you come at this. This theory that you have that there is no swing voter. Explain that, and how does that play itself out?
Yeah, I'm glad you ask about that. I mean, the truth is, like, my argument is not actually that there is no swing.
Right. I know that. I know you don't mean that literally.
And unfortunately, I have a couple of critics, you know, in the election analyst world, you know, have some me, you know, alternative reasons to want to.
Well, because you're the girl playing. You're the girl playing in an all male or largely male dominated space.
You know, so. That headline's great for getting clicks, but not so great for me defending my research. So
Right, exactly.
Have to defend what I mean by swing voters, but I'm arguing. A lot of the pundits talk about a big group of independents in the electorate. It's much smaller because most are leaners, and leaners behave as closet partisans. They vote with the party. They have policy preferences that are very partisan. They're basically embarrassed partisans, right? And so we're talking about 10, 12% of the general electorate that are what we call pure independents. And then what I'm talking about with them is that, you know, many of them are not these glorified independents that Chuck Todd kind of puts out there where they're examining every issue. And of course, they're going to vote for Doug Jones over Sessions because he's more moderate and he's more, you know, bipartisan and he's more median voter. In 2020, they may vote for Doug Jones because Donald Trump is president. But in 2024, 2022, whenever, you know, next time he's up, actually, would be 2026. If there's a Republican president, they'd probably break against Doug Jones, mostly because they're really sensitive to the upper atmosphere of the cycle. Right. So that's what I argue about independence in terms of like vote choice. But the main argument that I'm making is that there's a second swing that's just as important about independence, and it never gets talked about. And what we're talking about there is, you know, you've got, say, 100 independents that show up and they voted for Obama and then they voted for Trump. And that's important. OK, I'm not saying that's not important, but there's also 100 independents that voted in 2012 for Obama that didn't show up in 2016 because they weren't motivated to vote.
Right.
And those people are also very important to the overall two-party vote share, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I talk about with independents.
So there, the when you look at the analysis of 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, there are those out there who question your central idea that elections are won by turnout. Right. And you know that people entering and sort of getting coming in and coming out of the electorate is more indicative of how things are going to play out rather than folks just switching sides. Talk about that, because I agree with you that this is always from someone who's been grassrooting this since I was a county chairman and even before. It is all about the turnout. You're not, you know, trying to get someone to switch sides and trying to figure out, okay, today, how does Joe feel about my candidate? I just need I need to turn his ass out if I have any inclination he's on my side.
Oh, shit. Because Joe is, you know, also, I mean, it's one thing when Michael Steele's pondering that, but when you're a Democrat pondering that and Michael Steele's on the other side, Michael Steele's sending Joe some compelling shit.
That's okay? Right. Right. That's right. Exactly right.
Democrats are sending Joe some 5-page policy brief about some bullshit he doesn't care about, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's a double constraint. But
my goal is to get Joe animated enough and excited enough, pissed off enough, happy enough.
Never vote Democrat again. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I always try to stress that, you know, when you're talking about Democrats versus Republicans, or talking about a team in the Republicans that, you know, basically are going out there with a Maserati in terms of their electioneering technique versus a Fiat in the other side. Right. I mean, like, it's taking candy from a baby in terms of persuasion. Right. So, And also, you know, I would probably go with the guy that flipped 63 House seats. Right.
Yeah.
It seems like that guy probably knows what the hell he's talking about.
I have a slight clue. Yeah. Rachel, on a sidebar on that point, yeah. What is so interesting about what you say in your work and what you have now proven through your analysis is exactly where I was coming from in 10. And I, you know, Republicans like to beat their chest like they're all, you know, down with it and they get it and they're all, you know, sort of sophisticated and stuff. They really aren't. In many respects, they're kind of old school. So any new thinking becomes like, okay, really, you know, rather suspicious. And I remember sitting in meetings and telling folks how I was wanted to game out this 2009-2010 cycle, starting with winning the governorship of New Jersey and winning the governorship in Virginia. Because remember, we had just come off a shit show of election in 2008.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. You were supposed to be dead.
Right.
Like, FDR generationally dead.
Right. Exactly. And then you layer on top of that what happened where the base just left the party in 2006. I know that well because I was on the ballot in 2006. So I'm coming from this perspective of sort of trying to figure out, okay, what the hell is pissing people off so much that our own folks don't want to play with us? So once you figured that part out, I looked at it as a 12-step. You know, I got to admit we have a problem. Step number one, like any good alcoholic or recovering addict, I got to admit I have a problem.
And that's where I have the Democrats, I think, at step one right now.
They're getting there. Getting there. There's some who still fully haven't admitted they have a problem.
And I don't have the D trip there because I have never gotten to meet with a single one of them, but I've got a lot of the members there. All right, go on.
So you've got this space in which you're trying to redefine the game. And my strategy, because as I would tell people, I learned the game not from Republicans, but from Democrats. I grew up in Washington, D.C. I live in a county where there are 58,000 Republicans out of 700,000 people. So, you know, I've had to learn the game a lot.
Yes, exactly. You had to play well. Yeah,
exactly. So in this space where, you know, the pool of who shows up changes, the turnout piece is critical. And it was something that I focused on in combining. Okay, identifying who my voter is, and then how do I get them to turn out? And the way we did it was to make the case rather old school way. It's like, let's talk about what we believe and who we are. So it helped tap into the Tea Party because I had to manage that problem up front because it came online just as I was coming in the door and starting to take out good candidates, you know, in Delaware and Utah and places like that. And so we had to manage that issue, but I had to understand what it was. So how do you, in your analysis, wrap all of that into this idea of turnout and how the Democrats now, for example, can or should manage that?
I'm so glad you asked that. And so let me just big picture back for a second.
Sure.
Yes, there's been a long conversation about whether base mobilization or persuasion is more important. And they like to try to push my research into that debate of a binary choice, which is I'm not in that binary. I argue you have to do both things. But Democrats right now resource allocate in a way that's completely ineffective, and they almost entirely ignore turnout, especially amongst those groups that were hard to turn out before, and because they didn't come at it with good effort, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, just wanted to say that real quick. How you do it? So with Democrats, what you were just talking about, this need to remind Republicans in their darkest hour, where they just saw government have to come in with a trillion dollar bailout,
right,
and save Wall Street. I mean, all the party's most core principles of the free market fall apart, right? War, democracy building, neoconservatism, all of it just falls to shit in the mid 2000s. So it's a dark hour, emotionally for the party. Mm-hmm. And you have to come in, and you've got this rising populist movement. You've got some energy, right? But you've got to tap into it the right way. And what Democrats do, so I don't say you should, and this quote's been getting a lot of traction because I say it in every medium, but I say, you don't go from telling people I'm a fiscal conservative, which is that's the other party's ideology, right? So how are you supposed to get people who are liberally minded, and they might be Democrats, they might be independents, because many independents are on the left side of the spectrum. You're not going to get them excited to go vote for you if you are embarrassed about your own party affiliation, right? And when you think about multiple election cycles, with that being your main moderate forward-facing posture, what it has done is it has reinforced the GOP's efforts to brand liberalism and Democrats as weak, as inferior, as a bad economic platform. It's a position of weakness to campaign from. So what I argue for Democrats is, look, you guys need a holistic redo, right? You got to stop with this whole shit about being economic conservatives, okay? Because economic conservatism, don't take offense to this, doesn't have a great record performance-wise. It should be pretty easy to come out and make a case for a center-left economic platform, at least, okay? I'm not saying you should take your clothes off, put glitter all over your body,
right,
and jump into the pond naked, as a socialist, but you could at least make an affirmative case for some of these, liberal platforms. And you have all of this movement at the state level with, minimum wage increases and other liberal policies that have been enacted that you can point to as elements of success. I mean, California, for God's sakes, right? Went from a fiscal shit show to a shining, example of state government. You use it as an example, but you can't position yourself as, if your opponent's message is, don't vote for this guy because he sucks, and your message back is, well, yes, I know my party sucks, but I'm not really one of them, right? I mean, that's an inherently flawed campaign strategy, yet that is the driving paradigm of moderate messaging in the Democratic Party, and it has been for a couple of decades.
And that's why they are where they are right now.
Exactly. And no one knows it better than you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for downloading this Michael Steele Podcast Quick Take. Now, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, where, guess what? You can review us. You can give us 5 stars. Oh, yeah. I love the 5-star rating. Or you can catch us on iHeart, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.